well as the refugee and migrant crisis continues and Syrians continue to leave their home country and head for makeshift camps abroad. Some international artists are doing their best to make life a little brighter and a little more interesting for them. Among them is artist Joel Bergner, who has worked with Syrian refugees at Zaatari refugee camp in Jordan over three consecutive years. Zaatari refugee camp is one of those that you'll have seen featured a lot on the news in recent times, and indeed is one of the largest refugee camps in the world. Joel has also worked with communities in Brazil, in Cuba, Kenya, Mexico, Mozambique, Central and Northern America. And he joins us now from Cape Town in South Africa. And evening to you, Joel.
Good evening. How are you?
Very good. What brings you to Cape Town, I should ask?
I'm here in Cape Town doing a community art project with young people in an impoverished community. And the idea is upliftment and community development through the arts. And I'm working with kids to develop and design their own community mural. And along the way, learning teamwork and being able to contribute to their community, which is something that's very powerful for young people.
And I suppose this is similar work to what you would have done in some of the communities and in the refugee camps. For example, Zaatari that I mentioned. Tell me this, the first time you went there, it would have been 2013, I guess. Your impressions when you first arrived, because if anyone has seen images taken from above of the refugee camp, it really is startling how vast it is, first off, and how desert it looks. And that just those white makeshift camp after camp after camp, which is part of the reason, I guess, the colour is really nice to see it. But tell us of your reactions when you first saw it.
Yeah, my first reaction was just, wow, this place has very little color. Everything is basically beige and white and very little, you know, plant life or animals or anything. It's just, it's a pretty difficult environment, very bright, very hot in the summer, you know, and so it's an environment, and it's also important to understand that these Syrians who are going there are from a region of Syria. It's not too far away, but it's not a desert. It's very green. There's running rivers, and so when they get to this camp, and they don't want to be in the camp. They would rather be in other places, and they find themselves stuck there. It's pretty shocking for them as well, and they might end up spending many, many years there. There's children that are actually growing up in these camps. Mm. So there's a lot of adjustment. They've gone through the traumas of war, and now they're in this, you know, very difficult, depressing environment. And I also, one impression I had was, you know, the international aid groups and institutions are doing so much, and there's food and there's water and there's shelter and things are pretty organized, but at the same time, it's a lot harder to fix some other problems, such as when people are traumatized and when, you know, kids are not going to school and they're revolting and there's violence in the community because people have gone through so much with the war. And that's what we're trying to address with these kinds of projects.
So what did you do then? Say that first time around 2013, you went into the community, and where did you start?
Well, basically, we worked through several different organizations. It wasn't, you know, obviously, I didn't just walk in there and you know, without any kind of organized projects. We worked through an arts organization called APTAR, which is pretty small, and then we worked with a large humanitarian organization called ACTED, and also UNICEF and Mercy Corps. So we worked through all these different organizations, and we rounded up groups of kids. Many of them were not going to school and they didn't have any kind of structured activities, and we would engage them through the arts, but we would use the arts also to have different kinds of educational activities for them, and they would learn about important issues in the camp, like conservation of water, sanitation and hygiene. These are all really vital issues in a refugee camp. And we also had hired refugees who were adults who came with us. It wasn't just artists, but also educators, refugee educators that would work with the youth and teach them some of these skills.
And when, if anyone goes onto your website, or indeed there's other images I know on the web of some of the work that you did in Zaatari, they'll see some of the murals that were developed and the really striking drawings that were developed in the camp. How did you decide, and how do you decide when you go into communities, of the kind of themes that you're going to pursue, or what's eventually going to end up on walls, etc. there?
Well, first of all, we know everyone wants color. because, like I said, it is so drab. And so the color scheme, we know we want that to be very bright and colorful and uplifting. And then we work, I actually did workshops with the kids themselves, and we came up with ideas. We went over, we had conversations, we had brainstorming sessions. The kids would do drawings and sketches. And so I would compile those together and create designs. And I also worked with some artists who actually are refugees in the camp, and partnered with them as well. And so we would come up, for example, one mural shows two sleeping children, and it says above them, "I dream of ... Mm-hmm. And then inside the children, they are made up of all these different shapes. It's like Arabic, traditional Arabic patterns. And in those shapes, the kids came and they did all, they wrote and drew and painted about all the things that they dreamed of for their future, that they wanted, maybe they wanted to go home and make a better life for themselves and have peace and be reunited with family members and things like that.
And that's all great while you're there and working with them. But then you take off and you go to another part of the world, and it might be 12 months before you're back. Does a project continue? Or indeed, have you any idea of the influence of what they've done? You know, does it stick with them, or does the reality of day-to-day life sink in pretty rapidly again?
Well, that is a huge key to my goals with this type of work. I'm actually starting my own nonprofit organization now with a friend and coworker of mine, and it focuses on really doing these projects in collaboration with local artists and developing funding streams in order for them to continue the projects once I am not there. Because like you said, I'm going to leave, and so it's important to have sustainability in these projects. Mm. So one way to do that is working with local artists. And in Zaatari, I worked with two artists. One lived in a town nearby, and she's Palestinian, and one was a Syrian refugee himself and worked and lived there inside the camp. And so working with them, you know, they were artists and they loved working with kids, but they didn't know how to take those skills and turn them into community public art projects. So I mentored them in that aspect so they could learn those kind of skills. And then now, once I left, they both were able to do some projects after that. Of course, the hard part is getting that funding to continue the projects.
Yeah. One other thing, between your work in, because you've worked with kids in North America as well, in, you know, in New York, who might be from troubled backgrounds, etc., and then people in Palestine and refugee camps and Syrians and Jordan, etc. Of all the various groups that you've worked with, what was the greatest challenge for you, Joel, or where was the greatest challenge to date?
Oh, wow. That's a hard question. I would say one of the groups I would say that is the hardest to, that was most challenging, is I've worked with street children and street youth, street teenagers. In Brazil and a couple other places. And I would say that's really challenging because, you know, all family structure and all societal structure for them has basically disappeared. And so, you know, really engaging them, and a lot of them have substance abuse issues at such a young age. And so that was really maybe the most heartbreaking, I would say, of the different projects, because at least the refugee kids had some family and some kind of structure, and you know, these kids really didn't.
Yeah. What's driven you to do this?
Well, basically I love community work, and before I started this work, I actually worked as a counselor in the US with youth who had a lot of different issues. And I've worked with the homeless, and I worked with mentally ill. I did all these different kinds of community jobs. Mm-hmm. Before this work. And of course, I always was an artist and loved to paint and do murals. And so I started experimenting about 6 or 7 years ago with how to bring those two together, how to really engage youth and use some of my counseling skills through public art projects.
Well, if people want details, and indeed to find out about your project as it's developing, as you say, you're kind of developing this whole new idea as well, along with your collaborator. I guess your website address, Joel, is the best one. It's JoelArtista, I think, .com, is it?
Yes, JoelArtista.com is my website, and Joel Artista is also my Twitter, so you can follow me several different ways.
Exactly. And his name is Joel Bergner. Well, Joel, the very best of luck with the project in Cape Town, and indeed with the rest of your projects elsewhere. If you want to check out Joel's work, as I say, pop onto the website. There's some amazing images there on joelartista.com. Joel Bergner, thanks so much for joining us on the show this evening.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Cheers.
The honey marijuana of day, the shamwork shoulder fan is the freesta car of a real is lawshake. Tamarios are Yasker's farm. Time Hunshan, the man rock and roll is Pecampacom. Aaron Mon Megiri, Manam Vasir. Then Rail Shen Rail the Is ni moodun dolerash, kachi hangajin.
And that's Katrina O'Leary there singing for us here in studio and singing Woodstock by Joni Mitchell. And the reason that you are singing Joni Mitchell is that it's all part of the Irish Language Literature Festival, which kicks off next week. And I guess Joni Mitchell is not someone we immediately think about when we think about the Irish Language Literature Festival. How did it come about that her songs are being interpreted and translated into Irish and sung by you?
Well, Liam Carson contacted me last year and asked me would I be interested in singing Kate Bush songs, Oscar Elga, and I jumped at the opportunity, and it was great. It went really, really well. And this year he suggested Joni Mitchell, and I jumped even higher because it's fantastic. It's really, really a beautiful project to be working on. The festival has been doing this kind of thing for a few years now, of having wonderful poets such as Gabriel Rosenstock and Liam O'Merla, do, as Gabriel calls it, transcreations, not in translations, transcreations, yeah, of fantastic classic rock and roll, like early rock and roll singer-songwriters like Bob Dylan, Van Morrison, even Bob Marley last year as well. Mm. And so now I've done the Kate Bush and here comes Joni Mitchell.
Here comes Joni. So it's not, and I know you grew up in Donegal and you do have Irish in you, and you can understand it and you can speak it, although she said to me before coming on air that no, you know, I can't really speak it, but I know that she can. But did you do the translation then? You didn't. It was Gabriel or someone else did the translation.
No, it was Gabriel did this one. All right. It's Gabriel Rosenstock and Liam O'Merla are both represented in my show and the Joni Mitchell project.
And has she any idea that this is being done, or is there any contact made with her?
I honestly couldn't tell you. I don't know. I doubt it. Yeah. But I'm sure she'd give it her blessing.
I'm sure she would. I'm sure she would. Now, the festival, it's not just about music. There is film and there's drama and there's debates and there's lectures and there's writing workshops, and it's for adults and for children. So there's lots of stuff going on. And as you said, there's also songs being interpreted by the Pogues and I think Van Morrison and that throughout the festival as well.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Your own experience, by the way, I should say, people will know you from, is it 17 albums you have now to your name?
I don't know, I haven't counted. It sounds about right, yeah. That's a good number, let's say 17.
It sounds good. A recent one was Carols, old Christmas Carols.
That's right, the Wexford Carols.
The Wexford Carols. And you had the likes of Tom Jones and Roseanne Cash also performing out. How did that come about?
That was a project that I've been working on for years, and I'm not finished even. There's going to be more. It's going to be a second instalment. Basically, when I heard Nora Nureen's version of The Darkest Midnight in December when I was very young and impressionable, I was blown away by it. And over the years, I just kept learning more and more of the carols. They're traditional carols from Kilmore in County Wexford. And anyway, the years rolled by and eventually it was possible for me to make a recording of it. I have my husband and I have a label called Heresy Records. And my husband thinks really big. I kind of think what I can afford, but he just thinks big, big, big. And so he said, we got to get big stars. I'm sure they'll say yes. And they did.
And they did.
We had a fantastic producer as well, Joe Henry, and Rhiannon Giddens as well, who is a fantastic Americana singer. Mm. And she's from South Carolina. Caroline, anyway.
Yeah.
I can't remember. It was north or south. But she spends half her time in Limerick. And in fact, her daughter goes to a girls' school in Limerick.
Ah, I see.
She was on the record as well.
That's a recent album. You're going to be performing as part of the Irish Language Literature Festival. If you want details, pop onto their website. They've all details of the dates and the times and what's happening each of the days. You're performing twice, I think, during the festival.
That's
Katrina,
right.
Are you?
Yep. On the 14th, Wednesday the 14th of October, it's an evening of poetry, all on the theme of crows, the trickster bird crows. And so I'll be singing a few songs, and Sean McCarlin is playing clarinet and doing electronic wizardry with it as well. I'll sing a few songs then, and then on the 16th, Friday the 16th, I'll sing my Joni Mitchell project. It's all part of the Imram Festival, as you're saying. Yeah.
Very good. The Joni Mitchell project, exactly. Well, listen, the best of luck with it, and that's running between the 10th and the 18th. Katrina, lovely to have you with us, and thanks for performing and thanks for joining us.
Thanks a million, Orla.
Cheers. That's Katrina O'Leary joining us here in studio on The Green Room. We'll be back with you after this.